Good morning. It's good to be with you all this morning, and able to worship God this morning. Excuse me. If you've been in the Wednesday evening auditorium class, you know that we've been studying the book by Heath Rogers on overcoming worldliness. It's been a really good lesson. We didn't get quite through all of that material. We had one lesson left, and so we'll plan to cover that in this lesson this morning. But some of the things that we have studied pertaining to worldliness and the actions and behaviors that we need to be watchful for and putting out from our lives is the interaction that we have with the world, understanding how we need to approach worldliness and the sin that is in the world as Christians. We've talked about drug and alcohol use, fornication, homosexuality, pornography, dancing, immodesty, gambling, materialism, sinful speech, and hatred. And we looked at each one of those in depth and, you know, looked at how the world views these things, how they participate in them freely, and then also how we as Christians need to view them, what the Bible has to say about them, and made some practical applications about how we can avoid these things and remove them from our lives. And so kind of we've made reference to it throughout the classes and how these various things have an impact on our influence as Christians and our ability to teach and influence those in the world around us. But that is going to be the central theme of our lesson this morning. How do these things play into our reputation, and how do they affect our influence and our ability to seek and save the lost in the world around us? So as we consider our reputation, we first have to understand that our reputation is valuable. It is something of great value to us. Proverbs chapter 22, verse 1 says, "A good name is to be chosen rather than great riches, loving favor rather than silver and gold." So this, you know, when we have a choice about what we want to focus on in our life, the material things of this life, the pleasures that might be there, this proverb tells us that we should prefer and we should choose a good name, a good reputation above those other things. A person's reputation, whether good or bad, it consists of other people's judgments of that person's overall qualities. It's the estimation in which a person is held by others. Basically, it's the way we are viewed by other people. You know, do we live up to the standard that we profess to be living according to? You know, if we profess to be Christians and we're living according to the Bible and we're trying to do God's will, are we doing that or are we failing in that? And the way that we live our lives is a reflection of that, and people will see that and they'll make that judgment about us. You know, another point that we need to consider is that a good reputation is not something that can be purchased or demanded. You know, we can't use our position in life. We can't use our station in life to say that you have to view me in this way. You know, we're viewed by our actions. That's what we put out there, and then we're judged by other people based on that, whether good or bad. And so it's not something that can be obtained easily. It's only earned through a track record, through a long period of demonstrating those things over and over. And one who has a good reputation is one who is considered to be trustworthy. And then when and if that trust is broken, that can take a long time to repair and to rebuild again. And so the damage that can be done by one who has a bad reputation can be very impactful to our lives. It can be something that stays with us for a very long time. You know, one of the things that we need to remember as well is that God expects Christians to take their reputation seriously. We see this because he has made it a requirement of those who would be elders and deacons in the church. And 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 7 says, "Moreover, he must have a good testimony among those who are outside, lest he fall into reproach and the snare of the devil." So this talking about qualifications of overseers or elders here, and this one is he's supposed to have a good testimony, a good reputation among those who are outside, not only among brethren, but of those of the world as well. And then also 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 12, talking about those who would be preachers, says, "Let no one despise your youth, but be an example to the believers in word, in conduct, in love, in spirit, in faith, in purity." And so when we talk about being a good example, you know, that has an impact on our reputation as well. You know, are we living the things that we are preaching? Are we being that good example of the things mentioned here in this passage? And you know, so we ask the question, why do you think God would have elders to have a good reputation among those of the world? You know, why do you think he put that requirement there? Well, it's because if they have a bad reputation among the world, just like we read in the verse in chapter 3, you know, it brings reproach upon the church. If the one who is an elder is supposed to be shepherding the flock of God has a poor reputation among men, and he is involved in some of these worldly activities that we've studied about, you know, maybe he has a tendency to lash out in anger, or he has wrath. He speaks with hate toward other people. You know, maybe it's that he tells or laughs at dirty jokes that are told in the workplace, or he acts in a different way in the world than he does with his family or surrounded by those of the church, or any of these other things that we've talked about as well. You know, those, if someone from the outside looks and says, okay, this is supposed to be someone who demonstrates all of the qualities of a Christian, and yet he's out here doing this, you know, what does that tell, or how does that reflect on the church? And not in a good way, right? It brings reproach upon the church. And so in that sense, that's the same for all Christians, right? It's not only elders that would bring reproach upon the church by doing that, but all Christians. And so we need to all be mindful of that and watchful for that. And, you know, as we talked about when we were talking about our speech, we need to choose our words carefully and think about what we're saying before we say them. We need to do the same with our actions and understand what the long-term repercussions of that are going to be. Is it going to be a benefit for the church, or is it going to be something that brings reproach on it? You know, we're also told that we are to be salt and light to the world around us. In Matthew chapter 5, beginning in verse 13, Matthew chapter 5, verse 13 says, "You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? It is then good for nothing but to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven." And so this passage here is speaking of our influence that we have as Christians on the world around us. You know, we should be that salt and light. Our actions, you know, should ultimately bring glory to the Father in heaven. And if we're doing the will of the Father, then that would be so, but one who has a bad reputation because of their worldly deeds and their sinful practices, thus they have a poor influence, that person does the opposite. They don't bring glory to the Father, but actually they do the opposite, and they detract from the furtherance of his kingdom. And so we can see also in Luke chapter 14, Luke chapter 14, verse 34, says, "Salt is good, but if the salt has lost its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? It is neither fit for the land nor for the dunghill, but men throw it out. He who has ears to hear, let him hear." And so when we talk about salt, you know, it's something that's good for seasoning, but if it loses that seasoning quality, if it doesn't have any flavor, it's not good for anything. But not only is it not good, it's actually damaging. If you were to throw salt out on the land, prevents the, you know, plants from growing. It's not even worthy of being thrown on the dunghill to be used for fertilizer for plants. It's just a complete waste and to be discarded. And, you know, we can make the same application to ourselves as well. If we're supposed to be that salt, that seasoning for the world, being able to influence the world for good, if we have damaged our reputation and we've lost our positive influence that we could have on the world around us, not only are we not doing anything good for the kingdom, we're actually hindering it, and souls can be lost as a result of that. Other souls, and we ourselves can lose our soul as a result of that as well. And so we need to understand that we as Christians are a constant advertisement, if you will, for the Lord, for the gospel, for the church. You know, people in the world are looking to us, just like children have a role model that they look up to. People notice, you know, our claims as Christians, and then they notice our behaviors. And anytime we do an action, we are sending a message. And so we need to consider, what message is it that we are sending? Is it a good one or is it a bad one? And so therefore we must protect our reputations. It's something that's very important for us to do. And so we'll look at several examples now, or ways in which we can protect our reputation. And the first one is by our actions. You know, we've said many times throughout this study that there's a way that God expects his people to act. There's an appropriate behavior for God's people. And the first of which is that we must depart from iniquity. 2 Timothy 2, verse 19 says, "Let everyone who names the name of Christ depart from iniquity." And so that's something that we need to be removing from our life. We must not have that type of thing present there. Also, 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verses 21 through 22 says, "Test all things. Hold fast to what is good and abstain from every form of evil." We've used this passage several times throughout our study. But this idea of abstaining from every form of evil, not just a particular sin, but anything that resembles that sin, anything that could be perceived to be of evil, should be something that we seek to remove from our life. And instead of trying to get as close to that line as we can, to border on worldliness, and so we can make our lives look as close to that we see in the world around us as possible, instead we should completely remove ourselves from that and hold fast to that which is good. Hold fast to those things that are from above, that are told to be good, that we find in the scriptures. Also, 1 Peter chapter 4. 1 Peter chapter 4, verses 1 through 4 says, "Therefore, since Christ suffered for us in the flesh, arm yourselves also with the same mind, for he who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin, that he no longer should live the rest of his time in the flesh for the lusts of men, but for the will of God. For we have spent enough of our past lifetime in doing the will of the Gentiles, when we walked in lewdness, lust, drunkenness, revelries, drinking parties, and abominable idolatries. In regard to these, they think it strange that you do not run with them in the same flood of dissipation, speaking evil of you." And so, you know, as it says there in verse 2, we should no longer live the rest of our time, you know, in the flesh for the lusts of men. You know, we're not here to satisfy our own selfish desires, but we should be focused on doing the will of God. You know, that should be the ultimate goal that we have as Christians. And And so all of the things that followed there that we've spent time talking about throughout these lessons, the worldliness and things such as that, we should remove those and focus our lives on doing the will of God. And, so we understand that these things of worldliness, a Christian cannot be involved in those. Fornication, dancing, drinking, drugs, tobacco use, all of that needs to be put away. And, a point that we made earlier, but I think is worth making again, is that Christians ought not even to be present when this type of thing is going on. It's not something that we can go and associate with these people and be around them while they're doing these things, but say, well, I didn't participate, so I'm not guilty. Our presence while those things are going on indicates our endorsement, and therefore it weakens our influence. If we participate or if we are there, it's assumed that we are condoning the behavior that's going on. And we ought not be found in those types of situations. 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 11 and 12 there says, "Beloved, I beg you as sojourners and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts which war against the soul, having your conduct honorable among the Gentiles, that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may by your good works which they observe glorify God in the day of visitation." So we see here that by our works, which are observed by other people, it will affect our influence and our reputation either for good or for bad. In this case, he says that our good works, when they're observed, should bring glory to God. But on the flip side, if our works are bad and those are observed, they bring damage to the Lord's church and to his kingdom. So we also need to consider, as we protect our reputation, about our words. We've said before that our speech reveals what is really in our heart. It reveals the condition of our heart, and we see that in Matthew chapter 12, verses 34 and 35. There it says, "Brood of vipers, how can you, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. A good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth good things, and an evil man out of the evil treasure brings forth evil things." And so, we spent a good amount of time talking about this, in the lesson focused on speech. But it's something that bears reminding that we need to consider the words that we speak and whether the things that we are saying are good or evil. And, ultimately, people expect Christians to talk in a certain way. It's unnatural for a spring to produce different kinds of water or for a tree to produce different kinds of fruit, as we see in James chapter 3, verses 9 through 12. If you see a Christian that's talking in a way, using filthy language, using curse words, using that kind of language, it causes you pause, doesn't it? It should. And the world will see that as well. They'll say, this person, he's always talking about the Bible and talking about God, yet he's talking in this way. This doesn't add up. It doesn't make sense. So when we consider that passage, James 3, verse 9, it says, "With it we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be so. Does a spring send forth fresh water and bitter from the same opening? Can a fig tree, my brethren, bear olives, or a grapevine bear figs? Thus no spring yields both salt water and fresh." And so we understand that our speech should not be contradictory to the godly lives that we profess to be living. Our speech needs to be matching up with the godly and faithful lives that we seek to be living unto the Father. And, if it's not, it's going to be difficult for us to convince people that we truly are Christians seeking to do God's will, that our ultimate goal really is to go to heaven. It's going to be hard to convince people of that. You know, they're going to see through that. They're going to see the hypocrisy that is there in our lives, and they're not going to listen to us. When we go and tell them that they need to change their life, they need to obey the gospel of Christ and be saved from their sins, they're going to say, you know, you don't even live the things that you say that you're supposed to be doing, so why am I going to listen to you? And so in that sense, our reputation and our influence will have been damaged. Then also Matthew chapter 26, verse 73, says there, a little later, those who stood by came up and said to Peter, "Surely you also are one of them, for your speech betrays you." You know, our speech can betray us. It reveals that true intent of our heart. It reveals what is truly in our heart. And people will see through it. They will see, you know, the real us, if you will. And so there's some questions that Brother Rogers brought out in the book. You know, how can we promote the word of truth while telling lies? You know, that doesn't add up. It doesn't make sense. How can we impart grace when your mouth produces corrupt words and foul language? And how can we encourage people to be saved from a perverse generation when your speech is filled with perverse stories and dirty jokes and things of that nature? And so we need to be watchful and mindful of these things as we strive to protect our reputation. Another way we need to look at is considering who our companions are. We are to remain separate from the sinful world that is around us. You know, that is something that we are called to do. 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 17 says, "Come out from among them and be separate, says the Lord. Do not touch what is unclean, and I will receive you." But that at the same time, we as Christians are to be a positive influence on the world around us and to those that we associate with. And so it's sort of a challenge that we have as Christians. It's determining how can we be an influence on the people around us without allowing them to influence us. And, you know, we know also that that we are not called upon to completely remove ourselves from society, to just, you know, stay in our little bubble and never associate with those of the world. That's not what we are called to do. 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 9 says there that they were not to keep company with sexually immoral people, but he says it's not in general. You know, he was speaking specifically of brethren there that they were not to keep company with, but you know, if they weren't to keep company with anyone in the world who was sexually immoral, they would have needed to go out of this world. And that's not what he was calling them to do. So, you know, we may have some social interactions and dealings with people of this world who may be involved in sinful practices. But, you know, as we do that, we have to, I guess, keep it in mind that we don't want to be influenced by them either, right? And so we have to keep that relationship in the proper way. Mark chapter 2, we see the example of Jesus there eating with sinners in order that he might teach and influence them. But there was a purpose there for his interaction and being with them. And so as we go through our lives and we interact with people of the world, we need to understand that we must not condone or have fellowship with their evil practices. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 11 tells us that we should have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness. And so, like we said earlier, if we're present while sinful practices are going on, it indicates our condonement of those things. And so we need to place some boundaries and some limits there as to how we interact with those of the world. There's a difference in associating with worldly people and having to have some interaction as we go through our lives and also preferring their company. And, you know, that's, I think, a key distinction that we need to make regarding that. you know, who do we consider our closest friends? Who do we assemble in our inner circle that we hear referred to sometimes? Is it people of the world, or are we closely associating ourselves with brethren who are of like mind, who are focused on the same things and trying to get to heaven? You know, we need to not deceive ourselves and think that we are an exception to the rule that we see in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 33, where it says, "Do not be deceived. Evil company corrupts good habits." You know, the Bible warns us of this corruption that bad influences can have on us for a reason, and we should not think that we are an exception to that and that we are invincible. And you know, I've heard people say that before, where it's okay, I can, you know, I'm strong enough, I can handle it. You know, that's not the attitude that we should have toward this. We should take heed to the warnings that we are given in Scripture, and try to, you know, walk in a manner and surround ourselves with people who are also walking in that same manner, trying to be pleasing to God. We see Psalm 1, verse 1, the example that we see there, but you know, walking with the ungodly leads us to be standing with sinners and sitting with scoffers, and we don't want to be counted in that group. We want to be counted among the righteous. Solomon also warned in Proverbs chapter 13, verse 20, that he who walks with wise men will be wise, but the companion of fools will be destroyed. And so again, you know, we take heed of this, and we recognize that we take on the characteristics of those whom are our closest friends. You know, I've heard it said in business self-help or whatever you would call it. It says if you want to be successful in business, to surround yourself with people who operate successful businesses. But the same could be said for anything, right? If you want to be a worldly person, surround yourself with worldly people and copy what they do, and you'll end up being worldly. If you want to be a godly person, surround yourself with godly people and copy what they do, and you'll end up being closer to a godly person. But ultimately, we should be looking to the Scriptures, right? We should look to the example of Jesus and copy what he did, and then we will be right in the sight of God. And so, you know, this is something that we should remember and consider as we strive to protect our reputation as well, is the companions that we associate ourselves with. And finally, we need to be cautious of our involvement in social media. You know, many Christians today have and maintain an online presence through social media, through whatever platform that they might be using, whether it's Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, etc. And you know, like our speech, whatever we post online is a reflection and expression of our heart, and it influences our reputation as well. And you know, we see oftentimes where posts are made or posts are liked, you know, without people giving serious thought to the message that is really being sent by that. Whether it's something that they are posting for themselves or clicking the like button on there saying that they support that. But anytime we post or like something, it indicates our condonement of that activity as well. And, you know, I've seen it, I know others have as well, where there are Christians who post, you know, immodest pictures of themselves or others. You know, what kind of message is that sending to the world around us and to our brethren? Is it building one another up, or is it tearing one another down? You know, images of alcohol being consumed, posts containing bad language or suggestive jokes, you know, even recommendations for TV shows and movies that contain these sinful things as well. All of those things we need to consider, and not just post things without thinking about it. Just like we don't speak without without thinking. We shouldn't post online without thinking about it as well. And then, another thing is that our response, if and when we are confronted by those who might see that, if I were to post something inappropriate and a brother comes to me and says, "Hey, you need to think about this post," how am I going to react to that? Am I going to react out of anger? Am I going to become defensive and get mad about it? Or am I going to say, "Thank you for bringing that to my attention. I didn't think about it. I was wrong in doing that. I'll take it down." We can respond in different ways, but the way that we respond also influences our reputation in the long term as well. And then, people of the world even recognize that our online posts are a reflection of our character. The point was brought out in the lesson that employers are now looking at people's online profiles when they apply for jobs. And it listed there that the top three turnoffs for potential employers are posts containing provocative or inappropriate content, drinking or drug use, and discriminatory comments. And we see in the news often as well, where either politicians or high-profile celebrities and things like that are coming under criticism for social media posts that they have made either recently or years ago, containing insensitive or derogatory comments towards others. And those things certainly should not be made, but this should be a warning to us about the impact of what we post online. And we need to be aware that whatever message we're sending by that post is once it goes out into the internet, it's essentially there forever. We can go back and we can delete it. But it remains, as soon as we post it, somebody can screenshot it, somebody can save it, and that can be preserved. Even if we go back and try to take it back, it's like the spoken word. Once it's out there, it's out there, and we need to be cautious about the message that we send as we post online. And so, as we've gone through this lesson, we've talked about our reputation and our influence, and we understand that our influence allows a great potential for us to do much good in the Lord's kingdom. We have a unique circle of people that we have influence over. There's people that I know that you may not know, and there's people that you know that I don't know. And we need to consider the ways that we interact with them and the power that influence can have toward doing good and toward teaching them the truth of the scriptures. And ultimately, the Lord will hold us accountable for how we use our influence and our reputation. I'd ask Derek to lead that song, number 460. I'd like to refer to that just for a moment as we close. But I think this song kind of embodies a lot of the things that we've talked about this morning, and some good things that we need to consider with regard to our reputation and our influence that we have as Christians. But it talks about that Christ has no hands but our hands to do his work today. In verse 1, he has no tongue but our tongues to tell men how he died. He has no help but our help to bring them to his side. Verse 2, we are the only Bible the careless world will read. We are the sinner's gospel, and we are the scoffer's creed. We're the Lord's last message given in deed and word. What if the type is crooked? What if the print is blurred? That's the message that we're sending. What if it doesn't add up with what we are trying to profess? Verse 3, what if our hands are busy with other things than his? What if our feet are walking where sin's allurement is? What if our tongues are speaking of things this life would spurn? And how can we hope to help him and welcome his return? How can we profess to be godly people focused on eternity if the actions of our life prove otherwise? If our actions are focused on these worldly things, And going back one more time to our influence that we have on those around us, you know, something that we need to consider there is that, you know, we may be the only spiritually minded, sound, faithful Christian that that person knows. And so if we don't do our duty that we have to teach that person or to reach out to them, if we damage our influence that we have with them, you know, who is going to be there to reach out to them and teach them the gospel? You know, there may be someone in the future that comes along that could do that. You know, but think about that. You know, you may be the only person that person knows that has the ability to reach out to them and teach them what they need to do to save their souls. And so that is a warning and also an encouragement to us to stay strong and to do what we need to do as Christians and to maintain and protect the reputation that we have. So do appreciate everyone's kind attention this morning and also for the participation and comments that we had throughout the classes looking at all of this. But we will be dismissed to our Bible classes at this time.